This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Joel Berg, CEO of Hunger Free America, an internationally recognized leader and media spokesman in the fields of hunger, poverty, food systems, and U.S. politics. Joel is author of the book All You Can Eat, How Hungry is America? Before joining Hunger Free America, he worked for 8 years in senior executive service positions in Bill Clinton's presidential administration. Joel Berg is here to tell us about his most recent book, America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation, published in 2017. Welcome, Joel.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Why did you write America, We Need to Talk? What is your goal?
My goal is to help Americans understand in a pointed and hopefully humorous way that all Americans really are in a relationship with the nation and our political system, and it's not right to just blame the system or the politicians. That's all of our jobs to fix it.
Who or what is most to blame for our current problems in the U.S.?
I point out that the Republican Party really is to blame for most of our problems, but that I don't let the Democratic Party off the hook as well. I basically say the Republicans need hearts, but the Democrats need spines. But ultimately, it's the American people. The elected officials we have and often despise are people we elected by our votes, or even worse, by not voting. And so my point is, it's about time that we all take responsibility for the mess we're in and do our own part to clean it up.
Would you elaborate on what's wrong with the relationship between American citizens and their country?
Well, the opening section of my book is called The Talk, and it opens with, America, I love you, but I'm not in love with you anymore. And it goes on, and all that's wrong, that the 400 wealthiest Americans now have 6 times as much money as the entire U.S. budget deficit. Meanwhile, we have millions of people who are homeless. 42 million Americans live in households that can't afford enough food. Even per capita, we have far higher hunger than any industrialized Western nation on the planet. And it's not just our economics that are messed up. We have a heroin epidemic throughout rural America. We have the highest suicide rate in America in 20 years. Soldiers are now more likely to die from suicide than from battle. We have a love-hate relationship with sex as a nation. We love sex. We have it all over our popular culture, but we also hate sex, and we reward sex and punish sex. And if we love and hate sex, we love and hate each other. And the punishment's mostly doled out to women who we try denying access to reproductive choice. So on a wide variety of indicators, America's falling behind, America's falling apart. We have the second president in less than 20 years elected while losing the popular vote, something no other democracy on the planet would tolerate. And frankly, we elected someone ridiculously, absurdly unqualified to be the leader of the free world. So I think most people in the country realize something's grievously gone off track in our nation.
What role do you see for nonprofits in addressing America's problems?
So I have a chapter in the book called Three Cups of Crime Spree, and it makes fun of the book Three Cups of Tea, which was written by a nonprofit leader, and it turned out that much of what he claimed in the book about his own personal biography, about what his nonprofit supposedly did in Afghanistan, is really overstated. And so I point out that nonprofits play a critical role, and I am CEO. This is my full-time day job in addition to writing books. I am CEO of a national nonprofit called Hunger Free America. Go to our website at hungerfreeamerica.org to find out how to donate or volunteer or advocate. And we help people access food. We help promote programs and policies that will end hunger in America. But I point out in my book, we cannot believe that the nonprofit sector alone can solve the major problems in America. It's been a myth that's been pushed really for decades now, since the Reagan era, that somehow government's the enemy, government does everything wrong, and nonprofits are virtuous and good and efficient. And I go in my book, America, We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation, in depth about how the nonprofit sector is often more crooked, more inefficient, more turf conscious than government, and has very little accountability. So while the country desperately needs a thriving, robust, honest nonprofit sector, because the sector is so poorly regulated and it's basically on a trust system because nonprofits have halos. There's a lot of inefficiency and I hate to say it, crookedness in the nonprofit sector. You know, nonprofits should go back to doing what we do best. You know, be a vocal prophetic voice for change, for filling in the gaps in government services, for helping really do things that government can't do, for instance, respond quickly to individual needs. But this idea that nonprofits should be basically providing a massive safety net, basic food and housing and healthcare and childcare for Americans, when in most industrialized Western countries, those functions are performed by government, really shows you how great the imbalance has become. And really, we've fostered this myth that charities can replace government when that's just not true.
What is your view of the tax deduction if you donate to a nonprofit?
I think you should get a tax deduction for donating to nonprofits, but I think in exchange for that, nonprofits should have more accountability. Too many of my fellow nonprofit executive directors heartily say, oh, I don't get government grants, so I'm not dependent on government at all. Well, hold a second. If you get tax-deductible contributions and your donors pay less in taxes because they're giving your organization money, you are, in fact, being subsidized by the government. And there are nonprofit leaders, including anti-poverty nonprofit leaders, that now earn more than the president of the United States. And I know they have tough jobs. Goodness knows I've run a nonprofit group for 15 and a half years now. But none of us have to decide whether to send troops into battle. None of us decide whether to pardon someone on death row. So I really, with all due respect to people in the nonprofit sector, my good friends, none of them need to make as much as the President of the United States in this idea, oh, you've got to pay nonprofit executives through the roof to get good people. That's preposterous. Some of the highest paid people have turned out to be the most crooked and bad managers, and some adequately and normally compensated people turn out to be great leaders. So I do think there should be tax deductions for donations. Perhaps there should be more tax deductions for donating to anti-poverty organizations. Some entities like huge hospitals or huge universities where there are multiple executives making millions of dollars a year, literally millions of dollars a year, I think it's worth examining whether some of those entities should still have tax-deductible status. But the unique role of nonprofits in America is important and should be maintained, just with reform and more oversight.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joel Berg, author of America We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. In your book, you lay out a 12-step program to fix our relationship with America. How can we mend the divisions among Americans?
First and foremost, I call for what I call a responsibility for all society. That means that everyone from a corporate executive to someone receiving cash assistance, welfare from the government, ought to act in a responsible way. And the left is always going on and on and on about how the wealthy should be more responsible, and I obviously agree with that. And the right sometimes gives the false impression that low-income people don't want to work, that they're having too many children, that all they want to do is take drugs, which just isn't true. But the fact of the matter is low-income people, like all Americans, can do more to help the society as a whole, can do more to be responsible. And so some on the left say, well, because people on Wall Street are stealing, or defense contractors are stealing, then we ought to look the other way when low-income people engage in irresponsible behavior. And I say that's ridiculous. We should not lower the bar for all society. We should raise the bar and say that everyone's got to do their fair share. I talk about more people serving in the military and how harmful it is for the country, that so many of the people who are the biggest cheerleaders for war are the least likely to fight the wars themselves or send their own kids. And then I call for two very specific policy proposals. One is what I call hope accounts and action plans, where I call for combining the multitudinous government social service programs and their vast, vast, you know, Kafka-esque application systems into one application program available by smartphone or computer, and then allowing low-income people to sign plans with the government and the nonprofit sector to set benchmarks for how the government, how the nonprofit sector, and how individual low-income families are going to work their way towards self-sufficiency. And so that really is what I call a radically centrist proposal. I'm calling for massive, fundamental change, but based on mainstream values. 2, I call for dramatic expansion of the AmeriCorps National Service Program. It's a domestic Peace Corps that was started by President Clinton's, also gotten some support from key Republicans like both President Bush's, and it basically rewards community service with a college degree. And so while in my heart, I'd love it if it was true what Bernie Sanders said, we can make college education free to everyone in America, I don't think the American people would support that. But if you tied that to work and you tie that to national service like the AmeriCorps program does, so that if you do a year or two of service for the American people will pay for you to go to college, sort of a GI Bill without the GI. If you work in a school, if you respond to natural disasters, if you help fight hunger, the society in exchange will help you pay for your college education. Those are the kind of policy prescriptions I offer. In addition to a massive change in American politics, I call for a constitutional amendment to dramatically reform campaign finance reform, to eliminate the Electoral College, to make it easier to vote in all 50 states, and really to make democracy work again. Because unless we reform campaign finances and stop the system in which members of Congress spend 40, 50, 60, sometimes 70% of their time raising money, there's no way we're going to be able to fix the rest of the country.
What prevents people, American citizens, from being involved in solving national problems?
I think there's a real false impression among Americans that they can't make a difference, that the system is too difficult, it's too rigged for them to make a difference. And I point out over and over in my book, America, We Need to Talk, why there are concrete examples in history that prove that's just not true. We had a people's movement that ended child labor in America in the 60s and 70s because national groups really banded together to push for an anti-hunger safety net. We got that enacted, programs like the Women's, Infants, and Children program and school breakfast, and those dramatically reduced hunger in America. I point out that in recent decades, the Fight for 15 movement has raised the minimum wage in Seattle and elsewhere. And I also point out that the marriage equity movement has been stunningly successful because people banded together to demand they make a difference. Now, some people say, oh, you know, this is just too difficult. And I say, with all due respect, get over yourself. You know, fighting a war, landing at Normandy Beach under incessant mortar and machine gun fire, that's tough. Crossing over the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma while getting your head clubbed repeatedly because you are African American and thought your people should have the right to vote, that's tough. Being a hungry parent and looking your kid in the eye and telling them you can't afford enough food that night for dinner, that's tough. Taking 5 or 10 minutes to contact your elected officials frequently, that's easy, and that's the least all of us should do.
How can we motivate people to become more involved and take responsibility for solving national problems?
Well, my book, America, We Need to Talk, gives a lot of very specific things people can do. I help people understand how they can be more effective in learning when news just isn't accurate. I hold both the left and the right accountable, mostly the right, but I don't let the left off the hook for pushing on facts that are false. I explain to people how they can learn about their elected officials, how they can learn about the issues, how they can join a civic group that can meet with elected officials, how they can volunteer in campaigns. And I plug our website at Hunger Free America called the hungervolunteer.org, which gives very specific steps how people can be more effective in the fight against hunger, not just showing up on Christmas and Thanksgiving, but really lending their professional skills throughout the year. You know, Harry Truman, when he left the presidency, said he was taking on his most important role ever, and that is of citizen. And, you know, in America over the last few decades, when we define what it means to be a really good person, we say, oh, it's raising your kids, it's, you know, having a good job, it might be doing a random act of kindness for a senior citizen crossing the road. But we never include being engaged in civic activities, going to town hall meetings, making educated votes, writing letters to the editor. Americans used to define ourselves by our civic virtue, and unfortunately, we haven't in the last few decades, and that's a huge problem that helped lead us into our current mess.
In your book, you point out that low-income citizens tend to be less involved in politics than people with more money. How can we help engage low-income people in politics?
It's absolutely vital to engage low-income people. No social movement in the history of the world has been won by one people on behalf of another. You can't imagine the women's rights movement having so much progress with only men involved. You know, many white people made significant sacrifices for the civil rights movement, and some made the ultimate sacrifice, gave their lives. But if the civil rights movement was just led by white people, we just wouldn't have had the progress we have today. Dr. King would probably still be alive and people would be patting on the head and say, oh, go slow, Dr. King. We can't have full civil rights yet. You know, obviously, the gay and lesbian rights movement had significant involvement from the people most affected, and that's why we've had progress. So we absolutely must engage low-income people better. And we at Hunger Free America are trying to do that through a program which we call the Food Action Board Program, where we actively recruit people who attend pantries and kitchens and who are generally low income to advocate on their own behalf, to go to Washington or go to state capitals, to testify, to speak out to the media, to generally lobby elected officials. And to do so, we have to break what I call the cycle of disempowerment. Wealthy people have a cycle of empowerment. They vote more frequently. They have money to donate to political campaigns. In return, their elected officials are more responsive to their needs, and they say, oh, this isn't just some pie-in-the-sky theoretical democracy-building thing I should do. This is a direct investment in my future. This is a direct payoff for my voting, a direct payoff for my campaign contributions. I get better stuff in my life. Low-income people don't have money to give to the campaigns. Unfortunately, they vote less frequently, and then their elected officials are less responsive to them, and they say, aha, I was right all along. This just doesn't matter. We've got to break that cycle, help low-income people understand, and all Americans understand that they can make a difference. Band them together in a way that we get victories and can prove things like, gee, we did get a raise in the minimum wage. This is going to be thousands of extra dollars in your pocket each year because of political activity. And once people know they can make a difference, that's a force that will be unstoppable.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Joel Berg, author of America We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation. One of your suggestions is to become an activist patriot. What does an activist patriot do?
An activist patriot engages in their country. You know, I challenged someone at a reading in New York to name who the third string catcher was on the local baseball team. And they knew. And then I said, can you name your state senator, not your United States senator, but your state senator who represents you in the state legislature? And this person didn't know that. And I basically say, look, if Americans can know all sorts of stuff about sports and spend hours listening to and calling in sports radio stations, if they can know the third string contestants on The Bachelor, who finishes in third or fourth place on The Bachelor, they can learn the difference between their U.S. senators and their state senators, and they can make informed votes. You know, I spend a fair amount of time in the book making fun of voters who make poor choices because they're ignorant. A lot of the media was tut-tutting in the early primaries between voters in places like New Hampshire who were choosing between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, two leaders who had diametrically opposite views. And I write in the book, let's not analyze these folks forever and, you know, scratch our heads. What are these brilliant people contemplating? And basically say, no offense, but these folks are ignorant, totally ignorant. The only thing Sanders and Trump have in common is a bad barber. Or frankly, people like Susan Sarandon, who said, oh, you know, Hillary's going to be worse than Trump on progressive issues, or there's no difference between the two of them. That's an ignorant statement that goes against a few decades of history. And so not only should people vote, they should make an informed vote based on the facts. A citizen patriot shouldn't pass on knowingly false information. Yes, I make fun of the right a lot, but in the book, I make fun of some Sanders supporters. There is a big meme going around of a picture of this massive, massive, massive rally that was supposed to have been a Sanders rally in New York City. And all the Sanders people were posting, can you believe this evil corporate media did not promote the Sanders rally? It turned out it wasn't New York at all. It wasn't Sanders rally at all. It was a big rally in Paris, France, after the Charlie Hebdo shooting. And yet all my progressive friends were posting this as truth. And I say to my progressive friends, let's not dumb down this debate. Let's not say we can meet the other side by being equally ignorant. The truth must, you know, win out. And people to be citizen patriots really need to know the truth. Now, I point out, I'm a full-time activist. I run an activist group for a living. I get paid at least some for writing books. I don't expect everyone in America to be a full-time activist. What I do expect is everyone to live up to their basic responsibilities of citizenship, to go to jury duty if you're called, to pay your fair share of taxes. You know, Oliver Wendell Holmes said, taxes are the price of civilized society. And my father taught me, if you don't pay your fair share of taxes, it's not like you're ripping off some amorphous, undefined government. You're really ripping off your neighbors. So paying your fair share of taxes is a key thing that every American should do if they earn enough to pay taxes.
Would you say more about the best strategies for organizing to address our problems in the United States?
Every social movement that succeeded has done three things. Number one, organized and mobilized the people most affected, and we talked about that a bit, about getting low-income people more engaged. Two, it's about convincing people in the middle. Too many of us go to the same coffee shops with people who agree with us, go to the same Facebook pages with the people who agree with us, only have Twitter followers of people who agree with us. We need to convince people who don't agree with us. People in Western Washington have to convince people in Eastern Washington and Central Washington, and we really need to appeal to people on basic values about rewarding work, strengthening families, strengthening communities, and not say that the right has a monopoly on those values, that many of us who are progressives are pushing those values very hard. And lastly, we need to isolate and discredit the opposition in a fact-based way, in a respectful way, but we have to keep coming back time and time again saying, no, that's not right. You know, a Twitter opponent of mine the other day claimed that the Wall Street collapse was caused by the Democrats through the Dodd-Frank bill. And yet the Dodd-Frank bill wasn't signed into law until 2010, 2 years after, you know, the Wall Street collapse. Many Republicans in Louisiana blame Obama for the bad response to Katrina, even though George Bush was president and Obama wasn't president for years. So we also need to push back on the facts in a respectful but firm way and say that reality does matter. The earth is getting warmer. Evolution did happen. Vaccines do work, and science does matter, and reality matters.
What do you see as the relative importance of our federal government as opposed to state and local governments and nonprofits in solving America's problems?
I worked for the federal government in the Clinton administration for 8 years, and I was told repeatedly, well, Joel, you're biased. You like the federal government too much because you're in the federal government. If you get a real job and work for the nonprofit sector or the private sector or state and local government, you won't think so anymore. Actually, I believe in the role of the federal government now more than ever. Properly done, the federal government should be the major leagues, right? Someone in a state or local office should say, if I get really good at my profession, I'll be promoted and be federal. A good example of that is the National Park Service. No one would say, or very few people would say, it's more prestigious to work for, you know, a local city park service or state park system than the National Park Service or the National Forest Service, the top firefighters in the country. And having worked with the federal government, with nonprofit groups, and with state and local governments, there's an awful lot of corruption in state and local governments. There's an awful lot of inefficiency in state and local governments. And given modern technology, the idea that a bureaucrat or government employee in Sacramento, a few hundred miles away and a five-hour drive away from Los Angeles, would automatically have a better idea of the needs of low-income people in Los Angeles than someone working for a federal agency 5 hours by plane away makes no logical sense. It's just a knee-jerk American reaction that state and local government is always better, when in fact, the facts show that sometimes the federal government is more efficient. We've had a single program that's given both by the federal government and the state government at Hunger Free America. And under the federal grant, we got the money in our bank account the next calendar day. Under the state grant, we had to wait months and months and months and months. So in a properly functioning modern society, the federal government should play a very significant role. Now, the government is not the end-all and be-all. I still believe that the top way to create jobs and raise wages and reduce poverty is for the private sector to do so. I still believe that individuals have the top responsibility for their own lives, not the government. But there's no question in any well-functioning society, government's got to play a leadership role. And in a modern society where states are all interconnected, the federal government's got to be the top coordinating force.
And how about our current federal government?
Well, you know, Trump's been in office a little over a month now, and so far what's been happening is quite dispiriting. A combination of a rejection of American long-held values of diversity and pluralism and welcoming, an attack on two of the bulwarks of democracy, an independent judiciary and a free press, that combines with almost jaw-dropping incompetence, implementing a new immigration program without bothering to mention it to the people who have to enforce it, really is troubling for the country. But the good news is we've survived some pretty horrible times before, and if we band together as citizens, we can effectively solve these problems as well and survive these tough times as well. And, you know, because we have a democracy, there are bad elections in the past, but there are elections in the future. And assuming we don't become a full dictatorship, and I hope we'll be able to resist that, you always live to fight another day. And a new national election's coming up in about 23 months, but who's counting?
What do you hope your book will accomplish?
I hope my book will not only help people understand that middle-class people and people in poverty are in it together, but let all Americans really do have the power to make a difference, that we can fight back, and there's specific concrete steps that every person living in America can take to make this a better country.
What's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I'd like to leave your listeners with the idea that everyone can make a difference. If you are in a relationship with a lover or a family member, you understand that it takes two sides to make that relationship work. And in our relationship with our government and society, it's not enough for us just to blame the politicians or the system. It's our job to make the relationship work as well as citizens.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Joel.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You were just listening to Joel Berg, author of America We Need to Talk, a self-help book for the nation, published in 2017 by Seven Stories Press. For more information, check on the web at joelberg.net. You are invited to join Joel at Town Hall Seattle this Thursday, March 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Joel and Matt Taibbi, author of Insane Clown President, will discuss the subjects of their books and participate in a joint Q&A with the audience after they speak. Again, Town Hall Seattle this coming Thursday, March 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and on kexp.org.